All right. So how will the budget situation, especially in the year ahead, affect different classes of contractors, say primes versus subs, for example?
Well, it's pretty clear that we're going to be facing budget cutbacks in the next fiscal year. What's not so clear is the distribution of those impacts between military and civilian agencies. And the outcome of the next election may determine that, may well determine that. But assuming there's going to be some sort of cutback, the question is, how is that going to affect contractors? One of the gating issues here is whether the federal what happens to the federal workforce in an era of cutbacks. If the federal workforce decreases and commensurately with the cutbacks, then the decrease in contracts probably is going to be roughly the same proportion as the decrease in budget. However, if they try to hold the federal workforce static, obviously much more of the impact is going to be visited upon contracting. And there may even be an opportunity or an attempt to increase the federal workforce to take over work now being done by contractors in the belief or the hope that that would be more economical. If those things happen, then you're going to see a clawback of a lot of service work that's been contracted out in recent years. And that could have a very serious impact on support service contractors of various types. It might help increasing some supply contractors or some specialty services who are needed to support the new activities if performed by federal workers. But in general, the macro effect is going to be a big cut in those contracts.
So in past circumstances, when you take a historical perspective, in fact, has that really happened, that contracting has been cut back when times are tough?
Well, absolutely. We've seen complete programs canceled. I think the difference here is that there has been more contracting out of services than there has in the past, and so that's one area where we might see a greater impact. You know, there could be a variety of changes due to those cutbacks. One definite possibility is that entire programs will be canceled. There'll be terminations for convenience, and that will ripple down through the subcontractor cohort. And those can be very disruptive. In fact, in some instances, the government may attempt, if they think they can, to terminate for default, and then we could end up with major litigation of the A-12 sort, which has been going on, as you know, for a very, very long time.
We're speaking with Joe Petrillo of Petrillo and Powell of Washington. And what about fixed price contracting? Because I imagine that's something the government might rely on more in tight budgetary times. And how would that affect the way contractors operate?
I think that's probably true. I think the variable compensation contracts like cost plus or labor hour may look a lot less attractive to the government in the belief that they're contracts where you have less control over the ultimate cost of the outcome. As a result, they may try to do more fixed price contracting even in instances where the requirements aren't really very well known or definable, so that you can get inappropriate fixed price contracting. And there might even be an effort to squeeze more work out of existing fixed price contracts than the statement of work really calls for. So the result of that is going to be either increased costs to contractors, which they may choose to try to recover in the form of claims. We haven't had an enormous amount of claims work in recent years. I suspect that some of the reason is that contractors have been able to price in contingencies in their work, and so some of the smaller things that might trigger claims are things that they can let go by in the hope of building a better relationship with their government customer. But if those profit margins go away, if those contingency costs go away, they're going to be more inclined to recover when they can for increased costs.
So if I'm a contractor, how am I supposed to adjust my strategy to take advantage of whatever options are out there?
Well, I think you need to be vigilant about the opportunities that are there and do your best to capture them. And then once they're in, be vigilant about the possibility of cost creep, requirements creep, and make sure that the consequences of that are visited on the government. I mean, one effect that people are expecting is that there will probably be more protests. If there's a shrinking pie, it's likely that folks are going to protest and argue and fight over over those contracts when they become scarcer. In some instances, people may even decide to protest tactically to squeeze another few months out of performance if they're incumbents, and the protest will give them an automatic stay at GAO. That's one possibility. One way agencies may have to counter that is to use multiple award task and delivery order contracts, because there's a $10 million threshold for most protests of an order award. And that may make that kind of a vehicle more popular among agencies because of the protection against protests for at least the medium-sized orders.
So there's going to be a lot of shifting and kind of re-strategizing on both sides while we look at each other warily, it sounds like.
Yeah, and the government has a lot of flexibility because they've been relying on IDIQs and other task and delivery order contracts for a long time, and those characteristically have nominal minimums, which the government easily meets, and the government has a lot of flexibility about how much work they want to put into the contract through orders. So there's a lot of flexibility on the government side there and a lot of uncertainty on the contractor side in terms of how they're going to realize revenue.
In other words, they might say this IDIQ is going to last for 5 years with 5 one-year options with a total value of $40 billion, but the minimum is only maybe $1 million.
Exactly. And they've got that huge amount of latitude and flexibility in where they end up in that very broad spectrum.